everybody. Welcome to the Film Pigs podcast. I am your host this time around, Todd Anderson, and I'm here with my fellow Film Pigs who are both named Steve. They have the same first name, different last name, so they're not from the same family, but we've been together so long we feel like family, like Fast and the Furious. I am here with Steve Falk.
Fast, Furious.
And Steve Skelton.
Furious and Fast.
There you go. All of us are here, the Film Pigs. It is very exciting. I think it's really important to have a podcast right now where you can be challenged about the way you think about films and whether or not you should see one movie or the other, given your knowledge of film, because there's the Delta variant right now, and if you go out to the movie theaters, you could potentially get the Delta variant and become sick. I mean, if you're vaccinated, it won't be that big a deal, I guess, and you won't be hospitalized, but if you're not, you will be. The point is if you go out to see a movie like Stillwater, you're risking your life.
And for no good reason.
That's the answer to the question. Should you risk your life to see Stillwater? No, absolutely not. Don't do it. But we're here to dive deeper into that realm. What Todd, do you risk Todd, your life for?
Todd, yep. Quick question. Question. The Delta variant, it's a straight to DVD movie or straight to streaming movie. Who's starring in it? Who's starring in the Delta
that's
variant?
That's a Seagal movie for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that's Seagal, it's got to be. I don't know.
You're correct. That's right.
Steven Seagal is the Delta variant.
And it was created by Vladimir Putin. Yeah. That's who
he
created.
He plays
the
a retired Delta movie. Force operative.
Delta variant force.
It's different from Delta Force.
It's not the same. It's Delta Variant Force.
It's slightly different from regular Delta Force.
It's not Chuck Norris. It's Aaron Norris. His brother. So we start this show every time with this segment we call Movie News, and it comes with this exciting music that you hear. It's exciting.
Movie News.
Oh, my God.
Movie News.
It's a crazy time because while I'm afraid to go out to the movies, I'm also excited about all these movies coming out. There's so many. I'm a genre nerd, as many of you know. There's so many horror movies coming out right now that I'm too scared to go see. Not because the movies are scary, but because the theaters are scary. But yeah. There's all these other movies coming out. And I think the movie news that's coming out right now is very exciting, both like scary and just hopeful. Steve Skelton, what's your movie news for this episode?
My movie news is has to do with the recently passed away Ed Asner, the late great Ed Asner. That even after his passing, the headline is "Judge denies SAG after a health plan's motion to dismiss late Ed Asner's class action lawsuit." Ed Asner was suing SAG-AFTRA, he and nine other SAG-AFTRA members, alleging, and this is quoting from Deadline, alleged that changes to the plan's eligibility requirements earlier this year illegally discriminate based on age and violate the Age Discrimination and Employment Act of 1967 and are a breach of fiduciary duty under the Employment Retirement Income Security Act. So even in death, as in life, he was a strong, strong union man trying to make the union do what it's supposed to do.
I never got, because, I mean, the SAG-AFTRA union is broken into two parties now, apparently. I never understood which party he affiliated with, because, like, much of what he said publicly, and he was sardonic about it on social media, would suggest it, like, at times one party or the other. I don't know. I'm curious. Was he affiliated?
I don't know if he's affiliated with any of, like, the factions that are running now.
Well, there's two parties. I mean, there's independence and all that, but it's literally.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what it specifically.
Membership
it does.
First, which is the one that Matthew Modine is running for, and Unity for. Well, I can't even remember the other one that Fran Drescher is running for. That Gabriel Carteris. It's the controlling party, and I can't remember its name because it's boring. But I wonder where Ed Asner was and all that.
I don't know. I didn't read more than just that one article.
All right. All right, cool. Cool. Steve Falk, what do you got?
James Gunn, the Suicide Squad director, cleared up some rumors about a Bloodsport spinoff, maybe TV show, perhaps Idris Elba's character. He said, the quote, there's a possibility of seeing more Bloodsport in the future, something I'd love to see, but there is nothing currently in development, so the story is false. And after seeing the Suicide Squad, I just want to say the only Suicide Squad movie or TV show I would watch is a buddy show with Polka Dot Man and King Shark. And the weasel could be their Joe Pesci. But that's... If it's not the Polka Dot Man and King Shark, I'm not interested.
I also want King Shark to be played by Steve Agee in a green suit with balls all over him. I don't want to see the cartoon shark. I want to see Agee.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
Speaking of that sort of, teams of people getting together, I was excited to learn that Expendables 4... has all these new cast members. So they've got returning. They've got Sly Stallone, Jason Statham, Dolph Lundgren, and Randy Couture. But they've added 50 Cent and
really
and Tony Jaa.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And Megan Fox.
All right.
Well, she's expendable.
Oh,
Jesus Lord. But the important thing is Expendables 4 is happening, right? That's exciting.
That is the important thing.
It's going to be good. It's going to be really good. It's going to live up to everything we wanted it to live up to. Speaking of which, we should move on to our theme discussion.
Burn, Hollywood, burn. I smell a riot going on. First they're guilty, now they're gone. Yeah, I'll check out a movie, but it'll take a black one to move me. Give me the hell away.
All right, that theme music that is fully licensed is intro to our theme discussion. And all right, this is, I'll be honest, I was having a hard time coming up with something to talk about because we've been doing this for so long, you guys. We've talked about all the movies.
All of them. Every movie that's ever been made.
Every movie. And in all the possible subjects within the realm of movies we've discussed. So, and I feel
it's
like
it's a complete podcast.
It's so hard to come up with new stuff.
We finished. We finished the podcast.
We did it.
Yeah, I think
there's no more. There's no reason for anyone to do any more podcasts. We covered it all.
It's over. All the podcasts are over. Thank you for listening and good night.
We did all the side missions. We got all the collectibles. We watched every cut scene.
Yeah, it's over. We've done everything.
The podcast is done.
So in a thin effort to keep an intellectual property going for the sake of cash.
Are we IP? We're IP?
Yeah, we're IP now.
IP?
Yeah, we've been on long enough to be IP, for sure. Multiple,
It's realms. We're a media spanning IP.
Well, look, if Reese Witherspoon's barely a decade old company can sell for $900 million, we've been going for way more than 10 years. Yeah. We should be able to go for, like, all right, take five decimal places away. That's at least like $900,000, $90,000. I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll sell.
Yeah. A bargain.
Yeah, we're all going to get paid at least $90,000 within the next decade.
Cool.
So in order to fill the gap of, IP property and its what you need to sell it. We need to sell this thing, right? So I had to come up with something. I had to fill a gap. It's like, this is a Black Widow or Avengers 2.
It's content, you guys. It's content.
It's content. It's 100%.
Content. You gotta always have more
not enough content.
It's about content. It doesn't matter about depth. But anyway, so I wanted to talk about CGI, particularly because I just happened to be on Twitter, and this guy on Twitter was shitting on another guy on Twitter for
weird.
Saying
that never happens.
No, I know it was crazy, but I thought it was bold and interesting. And he was telling this other guy who said that, I think it was Jungle Cruise, but it could have been something else. But he was saying this movie's garbage because there's too much CGI and the CGI is bullshit. And this other guy said, that's hack criticism. The problem with the movie is not the effects. It's most likely something else. And you're just blaming it on the easiest, newest thing to blame it on. And I thought, well, I side with both guys because I've watched movies where I thought this movie sucks because the CG sucks and it takes me out of it. And I've at the same time enjoyed movies that are full of CGI that it didn't bother me. So, let's start here. I am guilty of dismissing an entire movie because the CGI was either distracting or visually inert, but perhaps this Twitter guy is right. Perhaps I've been too lazy to figure out the true reasons a movie bored me to death. But when I thought further, there have been literal deal breakers, as I said before, for me, in which the instant that whatever the generated image was, it was so bad, it took me right out of my suspension of disbelief. And I found it so egregious that I had no interest in fighting that suspension of disbelief again. So, like, for example, forget the nuking of the fridge. As soon as I saw the prairie dogs on screen, I knew that Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was a garbage movie, and I found it boring from there on out. And maybe The Revenant was better than I think it was, but I can't get past the cartoon bear that molests Leonardo DiCaprio in the movie to get into it after that. It just literally removes me from the movie. But it doesn't, like, the CGI silly looking thing doesn't bother me so much if I'm lost in a B movie, which has fantasy or horror elements like Deep Rising. And I remember I liked The Mummy with Brendan Fraser a lot. Which brings me to Jungle Cruise, this new Disney movie. And that's sort of a mystery for me in that it seems to fill all the slots for something I would like regardless. But I found this movie really boring. And my first instinct was to blame, like, oh, the fake looking cartoon tigers or whatever. But maybe it wasn't that, because it seems like with Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson, I have enough star power and charm to get me through whatever, but still it bored me. So was it the CGI or was it something else? I guess I didn't get any real sense of peril in the movie. And even though I know that's a weird thing to say, because it's sort of it's like a goofy serialized movie idea of peril, but it's still, the peril in the movie didn't draw me in even on that campy level, I guess. So was that the CGI or something else? I don't know. And recently, the other day, I saw The Green Knight, which is a movie with a lot of CG. But a lot of it looks really cool. It's visually pretty great most of the time. I think as a movie, The Green Knight kind of dies within half its running time because it's sort of the narrative's muddled and it's the characters aren't tremendously compelling. And then you have other CGI that's not the cool CGI that melds well with the movie itself, but then you have this like weird fox character who, while he's supernatural, in essence, you know, fantastical, he winds up talking and doing all these other magical things. This fox, at first, he's just a fox. And the cartoon nature of him, the Disney-looking cartoon nature of him, was impossible for me to get past. So it kind of killed my interest in the movie at that point, which I was already clinging on to. So it was a mediocre movie that was ultimately undone by a CGI shortcoming, I would say, for me personally. I guess what I'm saying is, for me, you know, in these movies, and is it the CGI or is it the narrative or is it my own self? You know, I have an easier time going with computer-generated dinosaurs or Godzillas or dragons or deep risings or whatever because they don't exist in my reality. But when you show me something I've seen in real life, like a tiger in the Jungle Cruise or any of these real-life creatures, prairie dogs in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull or whatever, it takes me out of it. So, and an exception I can think of that, and I think I brought it up on the show before, is the CGI baby in the third act of Children of Men, which normally I feel like something like that would take me out of a story, but I was, in that instance, was glad that they weren't using an actual baby in that situation. And like, you know, when I see babies or children or animals used in weird situations in movies, you know, mostly from the past but present too, that takes me out quicker than CGI. But other than that, you know, the wrong things take me out of it. And I don't know, like I've been racking my brain trying to think of an exception, like something where I really loved it, and Children of Men is the only thing I can think of, where I really loved it, but then there was this CGI visual that was such bullshit that it ruined the whole movie for me. And in most cases it has, but in most cases those movies haven't been as good as Children of Men. So maybe I was willing to forgive Children of Men before these other things. Anyway, that's my take on it. But again, I don't know ultimately how I feel. I feel like this guy on Twitter made a really good point and made me think. And I don't know where you guys are with this, but that's why I bring this up, to hear what you have to say about it. Whoever wants to jump in, I know it's a lot to digest.
Well, is the term CGI anymore, or is it just like VFX, like visual?
I guess. I mean, but I think effects. If you say visual effects, then you're then that can also house practical effects. And that's another. I guess that's another.
Yeah, I think it'd be like non-practical.
Visual effects is not practical. Well,
I mean, I think it's not at all considered.
I don't hear the term CGI anymore. Like when I'm working with VFX, it's always VFX, but it doesn't matter. That just struck me because I hadn't heard that term. But I think, you know, I think VFX have always been a very fraught tool. One that dates a movie in a way that, you know, other things in cinema don't as quickly, you know, props and costumes and dialogue, the quality of the camera, particularly in the digital age where things are sort of evolving just as fast as VFX are. So we can really, you know, we can make a movie that feels epic and awesome, like The Abyss, feel pretty janky 5 years later, you know? Or certainly Lawnmower Man or Tron.
I'm not, well, Lawnmower Man for sure, Tron for sure. The Abyss, like I was told, a lot of James Cameron movies I've been told would be like visually mind-blowing, and when I saw them I was like, I don't get what the big deal is, but it's made for some
great stuff, but it's a deal with the devil that you're walking into, because you're making, I mean, I don't think it's coincidence that it's usually like tentpole movies, like action-y movies, because those are not necessarily the ones built to last. They're built to make a billion overseas or worldwide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and launch areas of different amusement parks. But they're not meant for, like, to be studied in film class, like
different
ones, you know.
Areas of amusement parks. I like
that. Yeah, like the new Marvel world or Pixar world. You know, and even, like, Toy Story looks awful now, if you look at it. You know, Toy Story 4 looks fucking awful. Insane.
Oh, but Hill and I watched the original Pixar short, not the lamps thing, but the toy. I think it was just called, or Tin Toy. That's what it was called.
Oh, Tin Toy, yeah.
And the baby in that short is horrifying.
All the people, like the people, Andy in Toy Story and the bully, they're horrifying looking. I mean, you know, and so it takes me out of movies. When I'm watching like Toy Story 4, I'm going, how is this going to look like garbage in 10, 15 years? No, like 20 years. But it is. It's going to look like shit. but you know, VFX can be great, can be additive to a movie. It could also be invisible, like Parasite. You know, Parasite mm-hmm. has shit tons of green screen work and visual effects, but you don't see it. You know?
Right. Well, that, I mean, to me, that's the ideal effect.
That's the ideal. But moreover, I think it has to blend seamlessly with a world that actually exists. And when it's just, like in Marvel movies, two made-up computer creatures fighting in a made-up space, I'm out. Like, I just can't get interested, because now I'm just watching a computer program. And... you know, I can turn on any, you know, Twitch streamer and just watch a video game going, and it's probably a little more compelling.
So that raises the question for you, Steve, if you're watching an old Godzilla movie where it's men in suits punching each other, it's like furries punching each other, versus like giant cartoons punching each other, what's more effective?
Well, I think that, you know, the camera likes to look at things that exist in space. Do you know what I mean?
And, but do you is the
and
question.
A Godzilla? Yeah, I do. I like looking at puppets. I like looking at miniatures. You know, I like looking at fucking matte painting backdrops.
Yeah,
I enjoy that because it feels real. And because it is, they're things that exist in real meat space.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, and I think that's where it's where you know computer imagery works when it's used to enhance something that is already real in front of the camera. And like Steve said, you know, when it turns into, all right, we're all just on a green screen and we're just gonna replicate. Or, you know, this New York street in its entirety and then, you know, crash a spaceship into it. There's a certain amount of it. And I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just me, but it's like I can usually feel that it's that, you know, the term uncanny valley, but applied to the actual, not just the humans, but also the world and the space. Sometimes you can really feel like the artificiality of everything, even if it's a fully computer-generated recreation of reality. Like, you know, like in the Marvel movies where they do a lot now, they, you know, Civil War was just that whole airport sequence is all CG. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't in an actual airport. They were on sound stages and it looked like it and it felt like it. And it felt a little too... There's a sterileness or an antiseptic-ness to it that... that doesn't exist in other movies that have an enormous amount of CG work, like Fury Road.
Mm-hmm. Practical work that it's married to.
But the CG work, the computer generated work, is used to enhance and fill in the realness, which is always center of screen in Fury Road. I mean, that's because he shot it all, like everything is shot so center screen through the whole thing. But you know, the reality is in that center part. And you know, if you go back and look at, you know, a lot of the VFX, behind the scenes stuff, you know, you'll see where they drop in all of the backgrounds and all of this. A lot of the CG in Fury Road was used in like matte paintings, essentially.
Yeah.
But you know, 3D moving through the matte painting was how it was used, and it's incredibly effective. It looks beautiful.
Well, and that's the Mandalorian technique, so to speak.
You're taking
real space and real people and melding them together in a giant warehouse near the airport. In other words, you're filming deserts and real locations, right? And then merging them with actors in a space standing in front of screens showing that footage, and the light interacts and the camera interacts all seamlessly. And but you're still looking at real things, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think what you see it most when you see combat, at least for me, because when you have computer images fighting each other, nothing is impressive or interesting because they can do anything.
Especially if it's a human, especially if they're human models, because you can really tell once the animation isn't perfect, you catch it unconsciously.
Mm-hmm. But the brain, the eye, doesn't perceive anything that's happening as extraordinary because you know it's not people actually making incredible stunt work happen, or you know, even wire work, even like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It breaks the laws of physics, but it's still them, and it's still kind of beautiful in a way. But when it's just and there's limitations to how high they can kick their leg or what they can do with their bodies. But when it's computer-generated characters, there are none. They could punch and someone's head could fall off and turn into a hamburger, and then that person could reach the moon and grab it and eat it. Like, so fucking what? Like, I'd like to see that in an animated movie, but not in a quote-unquote live-action movie.
Yeah. I agree with you. The question then is, are we just old guys who aren't moving along with, like, I just wonder about, like, our younger people who are coming up on, like, my kid is coming up on Marvel movies, and is he more forgiving of this kind of CGI effects work?
Yeah, I think probably just because, you know, he's grown up in a time where, like, we grew up, you know, when there wasn't any computer generated effects, you know, it was all practical, all analog optical stuff. So it all had to be tricked in front of the lens to some degree. And then in the late 80s, when computer generated imagery started being used, that became part of our world. And it wasn't really until you got to your Terminator 2 or your Jurassic Park the watershed moment for computer generated imagery as part of VFX, and all the tech that they invented to do that. But Jurassic Park also blended it with practical. The CG was blended with the practical dinosaurs, and depending on the type of shot that was being used, it would determine whether it was the fully computer generated dinosaur or puppetry I can't remember if there was any kind of hybrid. They may have just gone between.
Well, they also blended it really seamlessly with the CGI actor Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, that's true. It's cool to have a great CGI actor.
Yeah.
But the key in that too also is, like, even to this day, like, you look at Jurassic Park now, and you know, the computer generated imagery is a little dated, but it still looks pretty damn good. And a lot of the reason for that is, I think, because they had to, they were inventing it from the get-go, and they were making sure that they were getting it done right. And so the lighting is really what matches, and that's really what gives away computer-generated VFX in a movie, is when the lighting doesn't match. It's like the animation, but it's really the lighting. If you have like the and the reason I personally think, because why some of it you see it doesn't match some of the time, is simply scheduling. Because it takes, like, if you want to get really, really good rendered lighting in computer generated imagery, we're talking video games or film or whatever, it takes a lot of processing power and a lot of time.
Sure.
And you know, and so on, just for, on the pure business side, you know, houses that can process these images, you know, they get booked and they only have so much time, so you end up making a choice probably of like, okay, well, you know, we won't do this extra pass to make the lighting, you know, give it that little extra bit. This is going to look good enough because we got to do 300 effect shots. So we just got to move on, and we'll just live with the lighting as is. And that's why I think in some cases, because especially once you now, you know, movies now have so much computer generated VFX, it's just, it's ubiquitous, it's used everywhere, you know, from, you know, to do giant monsters and entire, you know, cityscapes, all the way down to just like, well, we got to erase a boom, you know, just, you know, erase some stuff, you know, out of frame because we want to use this take.
Yeah, sure. So I mean, it sounds like for the most part CGI is no different than the effects of the past in that it's hit or miss. So I'll ask you guys, because, you know, we're old guys ripping on CGI, and I think it's fair because there is a coldness to it that we've touched on and all that. But was there a practical effect in the movies of the past that you remember taking you out of the movie the way a CGI effect might have taken you out? Like, you know, like for me, it's like watching, you know, Jungle Cruise. I see this tiger and I'm like, I can't believe that The Rock is talking to a tiger right now. So was there a practical effect that did that to you back when practical effects were all there were?
I remember, well, this isn't really a practical effect, but Evil Dead 2, there were a couple of the shots that were, you know, like using old stop motion techniques. That dragged me out of the film, because usually it was done with really cool camera effects or makeup or puppetry, or, you know what I mean? And then there were a few computer stop motion, early computer, I don't know exactly what it was, that sort of like, you know, the girl's head going
up. Yeah, yeah, it's creepy.
Shit like that, there was just sort of like, it didn't quite kind of blend with the movie.
Yeah, I mean, like the stop motion Terminator from the original Terminator almost did it, but it, you know, it was such a scary monster up to that point that, you know, it remained scary. But I think, you know, especially as the movies aged, there's a real disconnect between kind of the stop motionness of the full body animated endoskeleton running around at the end, intercut with the practical puppet. You know, it's visually, there's a disconnect with that because of the old school kind of stop motion stuff. But it didn't really take, you know, it kind of takes you out, but it's at that point you've already probably been invested in the scariness of the character.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take you out completely.
Yeah.
You know, you're still in the movie.
I get that. I only just thought of this question now, so if I'm going to fill in my blank right now, the first thing that pops into mind is the Rancor sequence from Return of the Jedi.
Oh, Jedi.
The stop film monster.
It's that same kind of juxtaposition when he's like trying sticking the bone in the mouth, and you don't quite get all of the coverage of that.
It looks like a Harryhausen movie, and it shouldn't have because it wasn't.
Yeah, except the thing is though, I think that's exactly what Lucas wanted. I think that was probably Lucas's direction for that sequence was this should look exactly like a Ray Harryhausen movie, like a Jason and the Argonauts kind of thing.
I'm not saying I believe that, and I believe that Lucas continues to this day to make bad choices, the wrong stained glass installer, there's all kinds of mistakes you can make as a gazillionaire.
Read the Seth Rogen movie. He has a great George Lucas anecdote.
Wait,
it's really pretty funny.
What is it?
Yeah, I'll tell you later.
Oh, God damn it. All right, well
we got to move on.
Yeah, that was a very fun theme. Thanks for helping me figure out my feelings about CG. And let's move on to the next segment, which is scary and important. Oh my God, all those scary drums means it's time to go to court to put a movie professional on trial for crimes against cinema. If found guilty, this person will be reprimanded to the Robert De Niro maximum security penitentiary, where he could be or she could be put in a drunk tank or in a yard full of dogs. There's all kinds of things. There's a Sea Org. There's a lot. It's an intricate prison system and terrifying. I'm the judge. Who's the bailiff here? Who's
me?
All right, bailiff Falk, start the thing.
Oye, oye, all rise for the Honorable Todd Robert Anderson presiding, scotch in hand.
Thank you.
Or whiskey.
Thank you.
Lawyer Skelton, please approach the bench and fucking, remember he's a really honorable judge.
I will remember that. Honorable Judge Anderson. So
watch your shit.
I'm so honorable.
There'll be no shenanigans for me, Your Honor.
I just want to say, in the past, Mr. Skelton has always been very professional, and I appreciate his presence. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you,
make
Your
for
Honor.
A great court day every time.
I have a pretty a light case, quick case, Your Honor. I don't think this is a huge crime. Maybe this is like some kind of misdemeanor citation or fine or something.
We're in the night court. It's the night court.
But I do think it's important. Your Honor, the defendant is one of America's most prolific and celebrated filmmakers. He has touched on comedies, dramas, thrillers, documentaries, commercials, musicals, just about any genre you can think of. However, he's most known for his brilliant and incisive commentaries on race in America, most notably in his classic film Do the Right Thing. I am, of course, talking about Spike Lee. The same Spike Lee that has had to recut a portion of his latest docuseries on 9/11 to excise interviews with conspiracy theorists after backlash for including footage of, well, conspiracy theorists. So now I don't think any particular crime has been committed here, but in contrast to Mr. Lee's otherwise a more distinguished body of work, he definitely deserves some kind of warning or citation for giving voice to 9/11 truth or nonsense, even though he's gone back to take it out since. He put it in to begin with.
He publicly revoked
he's recutting the episode to get rid of it.
So also
I'm pretty sure, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Your Honor, I'm pretty sure movie law specifies that Hollywood only has room for one famous conspiracy theorist filmmaker at a time, and that position is still held by Oliver Stone. It is, after all, a lifetime appointment. That's what I have for the court, Your Honor.
Because here's the
thing. Mm-hmm. It's like this truth or nonsense is really upsetting. Lee also did that really really great Burn musical recently. So. That's why I'm like, I can't ask to put him in jail because
didn't he direct that Talking Heads Broadway?
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
David Byrne.
Yeah.
You've heard of him.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, and it's amazing. It's an amazing musical movie.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I don't know what we've got in terms of warning citations. Some kind of, you know, a little thin ice here with the conspiracy theorist stuff.
Yeah, that's of course very disappointing to hear. But that's just personal. When I want to talk about the law here. And,
of course, Your Honor.
First of all, I pride our court and judiciary system.
The judicial system.
Because we have so few people of color in prison.
Historically there are a lot less people of color in the prison system.
In our prison system, you mean?
No, just ours. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So and I pride myself on that. So I feel a lot of regret in weighing in on this, but I think it's important to point out people of any color who are QAnon-y or conspiracy theory driven. So I do think we need to reprimand Mr. Lee in some way. And I think the best way to do that is to strike Son of Sam from the record. So that film no longer exists.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
So ordered. Son of Sam is not available anymore.
I didn't know what else to do. It seemed like the best thing to do.
Your Honor, it seems fair.
I am the judge.
Where are we getting lunch, Judge?
I think we should get it at... Do you like Jersey Mike's?
What?
Hey, guys. What? Guys, do you hear something?
No.
What's happening?
Anywhere that's got a good, like, Philly cheese
thing. Did you hear that?
What?
Yeah, Your Honor.
There it is again.
Shit. You know what that is, guys?
Oh. That's Nick Cage. Every time
it's Nick Cage performing in a movie called Vampire's Kiss, and that signals it's time for the Nick Cage Bizarre line reading.
Bizarre, yes,
sure.
Is that
speaking of Seth Rogen? His book also has a great Nick Cage story in it.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah, what is okay? Wait, so. Tell us that, Steve Falk, and then tell us what the Nick Cage bizarre line reading is.
I will tell you, like
a Nick Cage line reading, not necessarily Nick Cage.
I will tell you the story off. So this, I was searching for the aforementioned Jeff Goldblum's vocal performance in Boss Baby 2, but it happened to go off Peacock the day that I was looking. It was supposed to go off August 31st, but it disappeared today, August 30th, when we're recording. So I had to pivot at the last moment.
It's terrible. And
yeah, I pivoted into something that is maybe stretching it a little bit. It's not necessarily the most bizarre line readings, but it is a phenomenal trio of actors digging into dialogue in very specific ways with affects. And it just happens to be a three-page-ish patter that is unmatched in film. It's The Big Lebowski, the sequence when Lebowski, played by Jeff Bridges, tells John Goodman and Steve Buscemi about the his rug being pissed on in a case of mistaken identity. Here we go.
This was a...
Yeah, man, it really tied the room together.
This was a value, dog. Yeah.
It tied the room together, dude?
My rug.
Were you listening to the dude's story, Donnie?
Walter.
Were you listening to the dude's story?
I was bowling.
So you have no frame of reference here, Donnie. You're like a child who wanders in the middle of a movie and wants to know...
Walter, what's the point, man?
There's no reason. Here's my point, dude. There's no fucking reason why these...
Yeah, Walter, what's your point?
Huh?
Walter, what is the point? Look, we all know who is at fault here. What the fuck are you talking about?
Huh? No, what the fuck are you... I'm not... We're talking about unchecked aggression here.
What the
dude.
Fuck is he talking
my
about?
My rug.
Forget it, Donnie. You're out of your element.
Walter, the Chinaman who peed on my rug. I can't go give him a bill. So what the fuck? fuck are you talking about?
What the fuck are you talking about? The Chinaman is not the issue here, dude. I'm talking about drawing a line in the sand, dude. Across this line, you do not. Also, dude, Chinaman is not the preferred nomenclature. Asian American, please.
Walter, this isn't a guy who built the railroads here. This is a guy.
What the fuck are you,
Walter? He peed on my rug.
He peed on the dude's rug.
Donnie, you're out of your element, dude. The Chinaman is not the issue here.
So who?
Jeff Lebowski, the other Jeffrey Lebowski, the millionaire.
That's fucking interesting, man. That's fucking interesting.
Plus, he has the wealth. Obviously, and the resources, so that there's no reason, there's no fucking reason why his wife should go out and owe money all over town, and then they come and they pee on your fucking rug. Am I wrong?
No.
Am I wrong?
Yeah, but...
Okay, then. That rug really tied the room together, did it not?
Fucking A.
This guy peed on it.
Donnie, please.
You know, this is the fucking guy. I could find this fucking Lebowski guy.
His name is Lebowski? That's your name, dude.
This is the guy who should compensate me for the fucking rug. His wife goes out and owes money all over town and they pee on my rug?
They pee on your fucking rug?
They peed on my fucking rug.
That's right, dude. They peed on your fucking rug.
Just brilliant.
It's so good.
It's such a great sequence of dialogue, too. It's like so, it's so perfectly written.
Yes.
And it like it just sings, and just like the, and Buscemi's just his like pitch perfect timing and everything. Just from the opening, I was bowling.
Yeah.
Bowling. He's just a step behind in everything.
Yeah, he's
but he's 100% supportive. That's what's so fun.
Yeah.
Like when he comes in too late, and then. Fucking Roseanne guy is mad at him. It's
John Goodman's a fucking John Goodman's a national treasure. The way what I also really appreciate is the dialogue is very written. It's very, you know, the pauses are written in there. The not finishing the answers that don't make sense, non sequiturs. It's all very written. It's great dialogue and performed. Just at three performers at the peak of their power, three of our best performers.
Yeah, and what the other thing I love about it too is, I mean, I think that you know it's absurd on a certain level, but I think we've all been in some kind of situation like this, where we're getting worked up into a fury by our bowling partner or whatever it is. Like that's the thing I love about it. It's like how. The emotion escalates from just bowling into just being incensed about
and it's kind of pointless
injustice.
Too.
Yeah,
like they're pointlessly incensed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I was never incensed about something good at any point when I lived in Massachusetts. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I bowled
well,
a
good,
lot.
Well, good, Goodman, you know, he has a fucking agenda.
Yeah.
He has an agenda to escalate, and he does it beautifully. And Buscemi is an impetus to it, and he handles it like he's a fly coming at his hamburger. And he's just, while he's doing his objective, he's also dealing with this pesky obstacle.
Donnie, you're out of your element.
Donnie, you're out of your element.
Was Walter. the bowling fantasy sequence, was that CG?
No, practical.
No,
I
practical.
Think.
What can I?
No, it was like it was done like an old school musical.
So good.
Sequence.
So good. I was gonna say, good. Hey, that's good CG, but I guess it wasn't. Sorry, everybody, I ruined that. Sorry. Oh my God, you know what that means. Guys.
Oh boy.
Why are you sad? You're not me. You guys should be excited. You like games. Competing.
I'm out of my element.
Being challenged intellectually.
I really don't like being challenged intellectually.
Well, I'm sorry then, Steve, because our game is called Name That CGI Movie.
Oh, man.
And it's real simple. You're each going to get 10 shots. There's 20 questions and a tiebreaker. And what I'm going to do is give you a rather crude description of a CGI creature, character, element of a movie, and you tell me what that movie is.
This is like going to be like the most like roundabout previs explanation ever. Like, well, my computer died, so I'll just explain to you what the previs is.
This is a side. This is just off ramp. But we had a friend who was working on Garfield, the animated movie.
Oh yeah.
And he got a really early cut of where every shot was different. It was from Breckenmeyer holding a pillow to Breckenmeyer holding a white blob of just kind of a general outline of the size of a cat, to a really sketchy Garfield, to full digital, and then back to a pillow, and just randomly between shots. And we got really high and watched it. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, I desperately want to see that.
What I love about that story is I literally told it, like, as a, I don't know, a medium? What's an interloper? Falk told me that story, and I was on set with Breckenmeyer and literally told him that story.
Oh, you did? Did he like it?
Told me. Yeah, he loved it. Well, you know, he loves you, so it was all good. Everybody was happy. So, who wants to go first on this thing?
I'll go first.
All right. Falk is first. Here's the first question. It's as simple as this. I'll give you this clue, and then you can tell me the movie or not.
Are there just stealing? Is there any stealing?
No. That would be too hard for me to keep track of.
I understand.
But you're welcome to steal, I guess, for honor. Stephen Falk.
Is that another Steven Seagal movie?
Yes. Yes, that's it.
It's steal for honor.
Steal for honor.
S-T-E-E-L.
Wow.
That's good. Falk, okay. There's a singing orangutan in this movie that sounds like Christopher Walken.
There's a singing orangutan in this movie that sounds like Christopher Walken.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. Operation Dumbo Drop?
No. Skelton, do you know what it is for honor?
I would guess Jungle Book?
That's correct. Not a steal. Steve Skelton.
Yeah.
There's a weird looking thing in this movie with big eyes and ears, and it looks like an alien, but also a monkey. I think it's a space monkey. He doesn't like Gary Oldman.
Oh, that would be Lost in Space.
All right, that's 1 point for Skelton.
With Matt LeBlanc.
Stephen Falk. This is a short clue. There is a boat tiger. It's a tiger on a boat.
Well, it's either going to be Jungle Book or Life of Pi.
Choose one.
Well, I don't know.
I guess they're both good. I'll take it. I was thinking Life of Pi. But you're right. There's a tiger on that other boat. Or was it a leopard? I can't remember. All right. Skelton.
With the miracle of computers is it would be easy to make it either a tiger or a leopard.
Yeah, it's true. It's the miracle of technology. Skelton.
Yes.
Here's your clue.
Awesome.
There's a captain that looks like a Nintendo character when he's on the upper deck.
Titanic.
That's correct. Stephen Falk.
Yeah.
Number five.
It's like the Sims are running around on the Titanic.
Yeah, so bad. Groundbreaking, though. Groundbreaking special effects.
Of course.
Groundbreaking. Steve Falk. There's some kind of woolly mammoth helping build the pyramids. It's a
woolly mammoth building the pyramids.
Yeah, it's woolly mammoths building pyramids.
I don't know. Is it the mummy?
That's close, but no, it's 10,000 BC.
I don't know. Oh, okay.
Oh, I forgot about that movie.
Yeah, I had to dig at a certain point. I'm sorry, Falk. You're getting... Yeah, I'm going to switch these. Here we go. Skelton, here's yours.
Yes.
There's a Frankenstein's monster and a Dracula and werewolves, and they love to yell and yell and yell and yell and yell.
Okay, the yelling seems like it's the big clue. I'm thinking Van Helsing?
That's correct.
Ah, I would have had that.
Damn it.
Why'd you switch him?
Well, because I thought for sure you'd have this. That's and I easy. Hope I'm not
he's
wrong.
He's trying to help you, but in helping you, he's screwed.
I ruined fucked it. Me.
Sorry.
I've been screwed.
Falk?
Yeah.
There's this guy's dad that turns into a bubble thing.
That's the Hulk.
Yeah, there we go.
Nick Nolte?
Yeah.
All right. So it's Skelton's turn.
Yes.
There's a dog that moves like a man pretending to be a dog, and it makes the old guy cranky.
Wait, say that again?
There's a dog that moves like a man pretending to be a dog, and it makes the old guy cranky.
Oh shit. I know what this is. It is, I can't think of the title. It's the Harrison Ford dog movie. It was originally the untitled Harrison Ford dog movie. But then it was, shit, it's one of the Jack London things, and I can't remember. It's not White Fang, but it's, the computer dog of the North, starring Harrison Ford.
Call of the
That's
Wild.
That's my final answer.
Right?
Call of the Wild, damn it. Yeah, that was it. Okay.
All right. Well, I don't think I can give you that because...
No, I didn't have that title.
All right. Falk. God damn it. All right. I'm going to do-si-do these two. All right, Falk. There are these giant piranha ants that hate Russians in this movie.
Giant piranha ants that hate Russians in this movie.
Yeah, it's these giant ants, and when they eat people, they turn into skeletons right away.
Is it called Them?
No.
It's the only ant movie.
It's a CGI. It's CGI.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh.
Yeah, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
That's right. I
don't remember that movie at all.
Well, I've seen it like more than once now, so I do. Sad.
You should have said it's Shia LaBeouf swings with monkeys, computer monkeys.
Skeleton.
Yeah.
All right. There's this malevolent ghost that sometimes looks like either Chris Kattan or Famke Janssen.
What? It's a ghost.
It's a malevolent ghost.
It's a malevolent ghost.
And
it's
That's sometimes Famke Janssen to you.
Thank you. It sometimes looks like Famke Janssen, but sometimes looks. Yeah, there you go.
And it's a CGI ghost.
Yeah.
So it's some kind of horror movie.
Uh huh.
And like, was it like House on Haunted Hill?
Oh my God, or? That's it.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, you just stumbled on it. Yes, you got it.
Holy hell!
Well done. Falk.
That was a total accident.
Yeah. Good job. Falk, there's a in this movie there's a giant lobster looking thing with the face of the Rock. But like a land lobster. It's like a lobster that goes on land.
Oh, land lobster.
With a stinging tail that some call a scorpion. It looks like the Rock.
Is that Mummy 2, the scorpion? Scorpions.
The Mummy. Let's go with the Mummy. And what
versus the scorpion?
When the Mummy comes back, what does the Mummy do?
He fucks with the scorpion.
No. If something comes back, it...
He returns.
So what did the Mummy do?
The Mummy returns.
Yes, correct. well done.
Return to make another bad movie.
It did. okay.
And that's some CGI that does not age well.
No, it really doesn't.
It wasn't good then.
No.
I almost said Curse of the Jade Scorpion, which is a Woody Allen movie.
Well, it's an easy mistake to make because there is a movie called The Scorpion King, which was a spinoff of The Mummy.
That's right.
The Mummy Returns was the very first movie The Rock was ever in which he played that character or at all. All right, Skeleton.
For you rock completionists out there.
Yeah, so you guys keep up. All right, Skeleton, here's your clue.
Yeah.
There's okay. All this wavy hair everywhere except on Patrick Wilson.
Wavy hair everywhere except on Patrick Wilson.
Yeah.
Wavy hair everywhere except on Patrick Wilson.
It's wavy hair.
It's Patrick Wilson, that's like another horror movie. And wavy hair everywhere. Nuts. Which one of these horror series is he in? Is it Sinister?
Mm-mm.
Conjuring.
You're both wrong.
Curse of LaLona.
It's Aquaman.
Oh.
Their hair is all wavy.
But his is tied back, so
it doesn't move.
I totally forgot.
I didn't know Patrick Wilson was in that.
He is. He's the bad He's the bad guy. I guess, right? He's the bad guy.
He's Ocean Master.
He's Ocean Master. All right, Falk, it's your turn.
I wish you could see Falk right now because he just put his head in his hands when I said the name, like the super generic name of the villain.
I hate comic book villains' names. When I heard there was a Flash and a Reverse Flash, I was just like,
yes,
I'm done.
Yes, and I've told you before, it's Reverse Flash, and he's also sometimes called Professor Zoom.
Did you hear about the superhero Cowgirl and Reverse Cowgirl?
Yes.
Those are
worth
my faves.
Worth it.
I love how Todd barely got that out but like before he started laughing at himself.
I'm sorry, I'm a child. All right, Falk. There's
damn it, I have one. Never mind.
There's all these dams and levees holding back the water in Miami, and I want to know how the hell they got that kind of infrastructure together so quickly.
Dams and levees in Florida.
Listen again. There's all these dams and levees holding back the water in Miami, and I want to know how the hell they got that infrastructure together so quickly. This film might be brand new.
Miami. Is that F9?
No, good guess.
What is it?
Reminiscence, the new Hugh Jackman film.
Oh, God. I turned that off.
Wait, I thought that was New Orleans. Was it Miami?
It's both.
I watched the whole damn thing.
How did you watch the whole thing?
I watched the whole thing twice.
What?
I watched it on my TV.
No.
I got really high.
Got through it?
Yeah.
I did.
It's real bad.
I did not.
It goes back and forth. Most of it's actually in Miami, but he goes to New Orleans. But whatever.
Whatever.
Skeleton.
Yeah.
There's a guy who used to look like Jeff Fahey, but now he looks like Max Headroom, and he is a real dick. In this movie.
Okay, so is that Lawnmower Man 2?
Full title, please.
Lawnmower Man 2. Is even more lawn mowing this man does now in cyberspace?
You know what? I
can't remember the. I can't remember the.
I'm not going to be a dick. I'll accept Lawnmower Man 2 because there's two subtitles. That are possible. It's either Job's War or Beyond Cyberspace, depending on what market you're in.
Oh, well, yeah, that was where I was confused because I wasn't sure which market you were asking.
No, you
about.
Didn't remember that there were any subtitles.
So have you heard the old superhero? Name. named Gangbang, and then his cousin can control the weather. His name is Blowbang. It's so funny. Blowbang.
What the fuck? All right, we have a game. There's a game.
I'm sorry. Oh my god, I've had one Amstel Light.
Fault.
Yeah.
In this movie, there's a bunch of bat demons that steal Rachel Wise.
Wise move. Bat demons.
Good job, Bat Demon.
I'm going to say that's the mummy.
No.
What is it?
It's, I have the wrong actress. Sorry, I'm changing it to Carla Cugina. I've screwed that up.
Well, that's not fair.
Well, wait.
Well, now you can change then it. That's my mistake. Then you can fix it.
Then I'm going to, then is it SimCity 2? Is it SimCity 2?
No, it was Rachel Wise, wasn't it?
Oh, wait, so now we're going to go back.
In what?
Shit.
In what movie?
Just what's the movie, and then if I can tell you what actress is in it.
Oh, I don't know. Sure.
I think that is Rachel Weisz.
I think it was right. It's Rachel Weisz. So, regardless, we're both wrong. No points awarded.
No. Fine. Todd doesn't get any points either.
No one gets points. You made me doubt myself, though. So maybe I should give him a point for that. I don't know.
For inducing self-doubt?
That's not hard to do, Todd. I've been doing it for 20 years.
That's why I can't get a job on Jeopardy. It's too much self-doubt. All right, where am I? Skeleton.
Yeah.
There's a rope.
Now, do you want to check? Do you got the actors?
No,
right?
No, I got everything right on this one.
Okay.
I had it right on the last one. In this movie, there's a robot that's like E.T., except he talks in radio.
He talks in radio. Oh, wait, that sounds familiar. Okay. Shit, well, this could be one of a bunch of movies.
I don't know what to tell you on that. You can pick one. Tell me the title.
Well, I mean, you know, if we're talking, if you're looking for the one that's also the name of the character.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, it's part of the franchise it spun off from.
But in which one is he most like E.T.?
Oh, well, it'll be Bumblebee then.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Falk.
But he talks like a radio in all the Transformers movies, too.
That's true. Stephen Falk, in this movie, there's a bunch of zombies in Vegas, but they aren't waylaid by being boring because of Zack Snyder. They are not being waylaid.
You know,
that's not a good clue.
No, I told you these weren't good clues at the top.
I can't even remember what that movie's called.
Is
it Day of the Dead?
No.
What the fuck's that movie called?
The one
Dead of the Alive Dead. I just watched it, but it was whatever.
A movie with zombies in Vegas?
Yeah.
Is it
one of those Mila Jovovich movies?
Yes. I'm giving you too much help.
Oh yeah, I think I know what it is now.
I don't know what it's called. Resident Evil something?
Yeah, take a guess on what the Vegas one was called.
What happens in Mila Jovovich?
Well, I don't know what that means. No, that's not it.
I don't know what it's called.
What happens when a species runs out?
Extinction event.
Resident Evil what?
Extinction.
Oh, there's a point for Steve Falk.
Wow. You just walked him into that one.
I earned it. Are you kidding me?
It's 64.
I only said about 8 things wrong before I said the right thing.
These aren't his genres, man. They're yours. I'm just
yeah, I don't
Resident Evil and then Resident Evil Reverse Extinction.
I like Resident Evil Reverse Racism. That's my favorite. Skeleton. See, this is what I'm talking about. if you don't get this one, I'll be genuinely surprised.
Okay.
In this movie, there's a stripper cop who gets burned alive.
Oh, shit. I know it's one of the video game ones, but I gotta remember the title. Stripper cop? I'm trying to remember, there was CG in that?
Yeah, her death is entirely CG'd.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Was that, was that Silent Hill?
Yes.
Ah.
There you go.
Wow.
That was a while ago, though. That was like...
That was, 08 or something? Stephen Falk.
Mm.
In this movie, there's this burly brawl, and it's stupid.
That is a terrible clue.
Everybody wears trench coats.
Oh, is it Matrix Reloaded?
That's correct.
Oh, nice! The trench coats was a good one.
tripped it. All right, so it's Skeleton's got 7, Falk's got 5. So I think this is a done deal. But to finish it off, finally, Skeleton.
What?
In this movie, there's a Remington Steele surfing on a glacier.
Remington Steele surfing on a glacier.
Correct.
I guess that would be the last Brosnan Bond. Is that what we're looking at?
Is that what they called it? The last Brosnan Bond?
No, but it was like, but what the hell was it called? It was called like Diamonds or Madonna or something. Like Madonna's, I think, in this one maybe, or I think it had the word diamond or diamonds in the title.
No, you're wrong. There are diamonds involved.
Or diamonds involved, but
very
it's not in the title.
Very prominently, but it's not the title.
So it's, what were his? It was GoldenEye, it was something with John
Tomorrow
Price.
Never Dies.
Tomorrow Never Dies, and then...
The World Is Not Enough. It's got to be The World Is Not Enough.
Not Enough, and then it's... it's Die Another Day.
There you go. All right. Skeleton won the game. Do you guys want to do the tiebreaker for shits and giggles? Even though it was good.
Sure.
It's 8-5. You guys did great.
Yo, I earned every point.
Well, what's the tiebreaker?
Great job. The tiebreaker is this, and you just whoever knows it first gets to answer. Okay, in this movie, there's this fat worm thing that looks super weird when you point at it. Or hop over its tail. That's the tiebreaker.
When you point at it or hop over its tail.
Is it Tremors?
No. Although that could be a Tremors reference, like current Tremors.
Is it Slither?
No, it's a CGI thing. And there's a fat worm thing that looks super weird when someone points at it or tries to hop over its tail.
Tries to hop over its tail. Deep Rising? Is it the Treat Williams Deep Rising?
No. It's not. It's really...
A worm that you hop over the tail.
Yeah. But it's not that you would hop over the tail for any reason, except that you're trying to make old footage look like it makes sense, even though you originally shot a CGI character or a puppet character with a human being in the role without thinking about the future.
You're not making this any clearer.
What is it?
It's the director's cut of Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope.
Oh, you're doing the Jabba
the Hutt's
Solo
a fat worm
thing.
And it does look weird when he gets pointed out and the guy... Okay, so it's fun.
Once again, a terrible, terrible clue that did
that
not
was
help
the
us.
Whole point. That was the whole point of the game. I said the clues wouldn't... Okay. Oh. I guess that means we're wrapping this thing up with a bottom five. My bottom five for this episode is the worst CGI sidekicks. Here they are in order. Number five, heading towards number one. Number five is Blarp, the space monkey from Lost in Space.
Terrible.
Number two, four, is Jar Jar Binks in The Phantom Menace.
Bloof.
Three is the character Ted in the movie Ted. Number two is the character Ted in the movie Ted 2.
Okay.
And finally, the number one worst CGI sidekick is Harrison Ford in Call of the Wild.
Oh.
Wow.
That was a good solid dad joke, I thought.
No, that is a good, that's a good joke.
That magical music from Adam Blau is to remind us that it's important to be positive about the movie. So I'm ending with a moment of positivity. While I, as a moviegoer, often balk when they lean on CGI gore, I would say that if you want to look for the best CGI gore sequences in the world, they would be brought to you by the Final Destination franchise. That stuff is great and disgusting. All right, that's it. That's the Film Pigs podcast for August, I guess. As always, thank you to Adam Blau for the incredible music. Thank you to Stephen Falk and Stephen Skelton for being great guys named Steve who know a lot about movies. Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you, Todd.
You're welcome.
I like how your moment of positivity was about gore.
Well, this is I'm a moviegoer. Was that you don't like gore in your film?
No. I just thought it was interesting.
I'm
going to be positive about gore.
Well, I mean, I was being positive about the movies that presented the CGI.
Yes, gore. Of course.
I was trying to say that CGI does have its place. I don't know. Anyway, thank you guys very much for doing the show, as always. And I've been Todd Anderson, and thank you for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.